everybody. Welcome to GenUX with our Intrinsic Data series. Today, we are talking to not just a colleague, but a good friend of mine named Sean Papp, and I'm super excited to have him on today. He is a jack of many trades, and he's going to tell us a lot about what he's working on as a passion project that deals very much with statistics. So welcome, Sean.
Thank you, Stacey. Thanks for having me.
Totally happy. I'm so excited to talk to you in this way. So tell me a little bit about you, what you do, how you do it, and where you are in the world.
So starting with my regular life or the new hobby?
Why don't we start with your regular life?
All right. So day job, right? Hardest or most important job is a dad of two kids, 7 and 9. I pay the bills. I run a family office investment management firm. I moonlight as a professor at the UCLA Business School, where I, at the MBA level, I run the Student Investment Fund, where I train students to be portfolio managers. And for undergrads, I teach personal finance and entrepreneurship.
Super fun topics. And like, we could have a show on any one of those topics. But Sean has always been kind of somebody who's very into sports. And I know that because I've known Sean for longer than I'm going to share with anybody on this call or watching this podcast or listening in. So sports is kind of a passion of his, and his son plays baseball and is actually pretty good. And they got into the Baseball World Series this year. And I know everybody's
not the World Series, right?
Wasn't the World Series? What is it called then?
He's too young. He's too young for that. He was only 6. So he made it into the All-Star Circuit, the Pony Tournament, and we won a district championship.
That's awesome. Okay, so how old does he have to be in the that World Series?
So the World Series, that's the same tournament, but at the 12-year-old level where they keep going. We got eliminated in the regionals.
Well, next year. There's always next year. Always ways to improve.
Every team but one, Lou, finishes their season with a loss. So
exactly. Well, exactly, right? But I think it builds character. I mean, you have to have a little bit of a loss to, you know, really appreciate those wins and to get there. But I think this was the impetus for one of the things that we're going to talk about today, which was basically sports statistics and where players should be positioned for optimization for the team, right? So tell us a little bit about, you know, where this idea came from, how it kind of started to evolve over time, and like where you are now with it.
Wonderful. So grew up as a Dodger fan, watching baseball. Loved playing baseball, but I wasn't good enough to finish a career even into high school. But I've always been good with math and numbers, and kind of drifted away from baseball. But when Moneyball came out, the movie that showed how the Oakland A's were finding a better way to analyze players and put a championship team on the field paying less money, I was fascinated at this analytical side. And I watched how in the major leagues, they position players based on who's hitting. Most of the times you'll see the outfielder pull a card from his pocket that shows them who's playing on the field and where to go. So I was, from that point on, I always knew analytics was really a big part of baseball. So when All-Star season started and I was no longer coaching his team, I'm sitting on the sideline, and what do? I started noticing a pattern. One of the kids on Austin's team, this kid Asher, he's really good, and blew me away where when I actually ran the numbers, 50% of the time he hit the ball went to left field. Another 25% and went to third base right along the same line. I'm like, wait, why aren't the teams positioning based on who you're playing? In the major leagues, they actually changed the rules due to analytics. It used to be that you could have your infielders wherever you wanted. You could have 3 on one side of second base and 1 on the other. But they changed the rules, so now you have to have 2 and 2. So you can have one player lined up right on second base, but he can't be on the other side, or you get in trouble. I'm not sure what the penalty is. So I always knew that this was part of Major League Baseball, and like, well, why don't I start trying to help Austin's team by looking at the other team and helping our coach come up with hitting charts? So I started going on the app that shows all the play-by-play for the teams we were playing against. And I started putting together little charts, just doing the math in a spreadsheet showing what percentage of the time each player hits it to each spot. Because at the six-year-old level, the biggest challenge is keeping the kids attentive. I would find myself, right, able to say, Aegon, the ball's coming to you. Next thing I know, right, he's ready, and the ball would go right to him, right, based on the hitting tendencies. So our coaches loved it, and they wouldn't let me stop doing it. So it was kind of a little fun project. And then the dad for one of the kids on our team, he was the coach for the older team, the 7U All-Star team. And he saw what we were doing, so he texted me on vacation and asked me if he could pay me to do it for his team. Like, no, like, you can't pay me my hourly rate, but this is fun, right? I like your kids. I'll do it for free. So I started helping his team out, and I would look at who he was going to play in his tournaments, and I'd put together these hitting charts. And it worked, like, so well. We watched some of the games online where because for his team, not every kid can catch as well. Mm-hmm. So you want your kids who can catch best in the right position. And he would move players from in the middle of an inning from right field to left field based on a tendency. And then it's a fly ball to left field. The kid catches it.
Right. And this is all based on math. This is all based on your statistical model that you created for this specific team based on the previous model that you created.
Taking data that's out there, right, mm-hmm. and putting together in a mathematical model and showing, right, what percentage of the time it goes different spots. Would it help to show you?
Yeah, that would be awesome. Pull it up.
All right. So here's the hitting stats for Austin's baseball team. And what I found was I created this hitting chart, which shows when they hit the ball, whether they're out or safe, where the ball went. So Asher, the boy I was talking about, actually, I understated his numbers. 59% of the time, the ball goes to left field. So when you're positioning...
What are all those? So I can see LF means left field, 3B, third base, SF.
So SS is shortstop. And so you can think of it as pitcher and center field are going right up the middle. If it goes shortstop, third base, or left field, it's a left tendency. They're more likely to hit it. In baseball, it's called a pull if it's a right hitter, or opposite field if it's a left-handed hitter. But I set these up so that it would graph it. You could visually see left versus right. And then 2B is second base, 1B is first base, and right RF is right field. This column means they're hitting it to the right side of the infield.
Right.
So one of the interesting things for Austin's team is that for the six-year-olds, they haven't started using pitching to each other yet. So there's a machine that pitches. So you have a pitcher who has to stand on one side of the machine. Mm-hmm. Which side do you go? Well, you can just use the hitting chart and say, well, which side of the field does he hit it more to? So traditionally, the way the teams play is a right-handed hitter, they expect him to hit it to the left side, so they would put the pitcher on that side of the machine. But what we found was oftentimes the hitter would be slow and it would go the other way. So we would be able to start positioning our pitcher on the opposite side. In one of the tournaments, we did that. The ball went right to him, and then their coach complained to the league. He was mad. We're allowed to do it, but he was not happy that we did it and it worked. So
was he not happy that you did it and it worked because it was like effective for your team? Or was he one of those parents that was like, we're all just trying to have a good time and you guys are taking it very seriously?
No, he was like, no, the former, right? Not the latter. This is, this is a very competitive environment.
Okay. Especially the dads. Fair enough.
So, so I just started experimenting. So how hard they hit it, I didn't even have that mapped out yet during the tournament. I came up with that later.
So can I ask a question?
Please do.
When the kids are, you know, in the age group that they're at, they're six-year-olds, like as they get older, don't they develop more muscles and strength? So is it more common, since you love baseball, that's why I'm asking this question, isn't it more common to see the evolution of them like hit to the left field instead of the right? Isn't that more common because they're stronger? I always thought that was a thing.
Here's a question, right? So here's the Dodgers.
Okay,
so I run the same analysis on the Dodgers. And not everybody has the same tendencies.
Oh, that's really interesting.
So one of the things I tried to simplify this along the way was originally when I was doing it for Austin's team, I would show what percentage of the time it went where in the infield and then the outfield. Because I noticed there was a difference. Sometimes a player would hit it one way in the infield, but in the outfield, it would be an even distribution. But I realized that many of the coaches didn't understand statistics and probability, so that it didn't make as much sense to them. So I tried to simplify this percentage into a level of a shift. So what this shows here is the Dodgers' tendencies. So this was through 130 games this year.
Uh-huh.
So Shohei Ohtani, as a left-handed hitter, he pulls it 39% more to the right than the left. Okay? So Freddie Freeman is also a left-handed hitter, but his tendency is not as strong. But then you look at their outfield tendencies, and Freddie Freeman goes anywhere, and Ohtani is going to be a pull hitter in the outfield. So it's these tendencies don't just stop. They'll absolutely change. One player, they'll change year to year. Austin's tendencies now, because we got him some hitting lessons, where he was in All-Stars, he was not getting it to the outfield enough.
Yeah.
Only 38% of the time when he hit it did it get to the outfield. And he was spraying it pretty evenly balanced to the infield. Now he's much more of a pull hitter and he's getting it more to the outfield because these tendencies do change. But it's going to be a slow progression.
Okay. I'm glad I asked the question. That was interesting.
So does that make sense?
Yeah, it totally makes sense to me.
So... now, in the major leagues, they have all this data readily available to the coaching staff, right? There's companies that scrape all the video game footage and do it, but nobody does it at the high school level, or no one does it at the junior level.
Right.
But the fascinating thing I learned along the way was that many high schools aren't doing this correctly.
Well, that's interesting because that's where they get scouted. That's where like players get scouted from in the United States is high schools, right? And colleges, but colleges are scouting from high schools.
The pros are scouting from high schools.
Yeah. So you would think that the coaches would be paying attention to, you know, Moneyball was a very popular movie. Why do you think that it hasn't caught on?
I think part of the challenge is how do you get the data?
Oh, yeah.
Right. For the major league and college, you have all these box scores with play-by-plays, and you have all this video footage and systems that break it down for you. But high schools, they're all budget-constrained, right? They can't afford the big, expensive platforms. And how do they get the data and put it together?
Right.
So.
Right. So.
And when you think of the typical person who plays baseball, they're not necessarily going to be the person who's going to be the best at the spreadsheet.
Fair. Except for you. You're very good with spreadsheets and you used to play baseball. So
I was not good enough to play baseball.
No, not at a pro level, but you still like to play it. You could play it as like a, just, you know, as a team with a couple friends.
Again, that's fun, but high school baseball is competitive. It's stressful. These people are looking for an edge. So at the year-end party after for Austin's team, I was talking to his head coach who works at he's the athletic director at a Cleveland high school, and he was a pretty serious baseball coach, and he's only coaching because his son's playing now. Mm-hmm. And he's the one who told me high schools aren't doing this. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. So a bunch of people connected me. So I now have for this coming season, three high schools on board that we're going to be doing this analysis for.
That's so cool. So how are you helping them to do this? What was your starting point and how are you getting the data? Just because you said they're not really getting the data. So how are you going to get the data to help them with this structure to, you know, place their players where they should be?
So they have access to most of the data if they want to take the time and do it. So okay. there's a great platform called Game Changer where that's where I pull all the data from, where it shows you the play-by-play. And so if you have the patience, anybody could go in and take the information. And if you have the Excel skills, you can take that information and turn it into the math that I'm doing. And then the next step, right, is taking that and turning it into an actionable card or insight during the game. So anybody can do it. Question is, do people have the time and technical skills to do it? That's
the question.
That's the question. Because some of these coaches, like, you remember, you know, Chris? Like, he'll spend 2 hours watching game film before his 12-year-old baseball game.
Really?
These dads are competitive.
Wow.
They'll do anything for an edge.
That is, I didn't know that you guys were like competitive like that with your kids. That's, I mean, it doesn't surprise me. It doesn't surprise me, but it's surprising.
Well, think of it this way. Most of these dads, they're living vicariously through their kids and they're living out their dreams. They wanted to be a baseball player and it didn't work out. And it's wild.
It is wild. So let's talk more about how these high schools have come on board with you. What does that look like? Where do you want this to go? Like, what is your end game with like supporting them to help them, you know, field their players efficiently and well? Like, do you see you being like someone who kind of helps some of these kids get scholarships and potentially, you know, winning records? And I mean, I'm assuming that some of these high schools are going to play against each other.
So for this season, we're not taking any teams in the same league.
Okay.
I'm looking at right now, this is a fun hobby.
Okay.
Now I've got a couple high schools that I'm going to really be rooting for because I'm really making an effort to help these teams win. If it works and it really helps them and I learn the lessons and because I've been able to automate a lot of the stuff. I got a kid at UCLA to write a program to automate a lot of the data entry process to make it efficient. So I'm looking at it as this is going to be fun to really try and help these teams win. But the coaches are also looking at using it for recruiting, right? Where they can show these scouts how their player stacks up against some of the other players that have turned out and become big stars. And they're just under the radar. Because one of the core philosophies behind how the data works is, a lot of times, whether a player gets a base hit or not can be a matter of inches on whether he was that close to being safe or that close right off the glove. And so what matters more a lot of times is how hard they hit the ball. And so when we clean the data and scrape it, you can really we don't distinguish hitter out. We distinguish how you hit it. right? So if a coach is looking at a player that hits 40% line drives, right, that's a big deal versus a player who only hits 20% line drives. So the coaches want to use it to help their kids get scouted, and then they also want to use it to help find kids that they can recruit to these schools.
Right.
But some of these high schools, they give scholarships to their players because it.
So some of these are private schools in the area you live. So I have other questions. Can this analysis that you're building be transferable to other sports as well?
So softball is the easy analog. I actually think it might be more effective in softball. Actually, the 7U coach's little sister played in a national title game on ESPN, 16U team, and we gave her the stuff. And they almost won. They lost in the last inning on some unfortunate plays, but the tendencies held. And the funny thing, the team they played against, one of the best teams in the country, these girls had wristbands. So they were already using it as part the same kind of thing as part of their game.
Interesting.
And it's the evolution. It's going to be get to the point where everyone does it. So
I think so. I mean, I agree with you. So you think that it can really only be used in softball and baseball? You're not really sure that it can. The theories be transferable in like football and soccer?
So when you think of kind of the effectiveness of analytics, right, it's all dependent on the data, right? And so you need data points in order for you to do any analysis. And so more of the ways analytics is being used in football is more for tendencies, right? What does the coach do on different down and distances and that kind of stuff? Because you don't really have as many individual stats that are useful. So baseball's always been the sport that has the most stats, and that's why it was the low-hanging fruit. Basketball, again, hard as well, because a lot of what happens in basketball doesn't show up in a box score, right? So you really need to break down video footage. So I would say all these, what I'm doing can be applied to nearly any sport if you have someone do the manual data entry for the key data points that are important. Baseball.
And then you can break it down the same way.
Yeah, you can break it down the same way. It's just that data collection process is going to be really hard. Baseball makes it super easy. It's a game that was just built on data.
Well, do you think it's that way because baseball itself is like, even though it's a team sport, individuals, the way that the team is played, it's like, what am I trying to say here? It's like when you're playing basketball or when you're playing hockey, it's not like there's a single person coming up to do a single thing at a single moment in time. It's you're all moving together. You're all moving as a team. You're all trying to communicate with one another down the field. So it's like a very different experience than what, you know, even though, like I said, baseball is still a team sport. You're working with a whole team, but it's kind of more, there's moments that are individualized that you can really pull out individual data as opposed to like what you're saying with like football or hockey or basketball, like until you get close to the scoring line or, you know, like there's still like so many, there's so much movement and it's not an individualistic play necessarily. Whereas baseball is a very much individual play when you're up to bat.
Absolutely. Right. You get up there, it's the stress, the pitcher versus the hitter. And that's what we're noticing now that we're getting into kid pitch. Right. And you see the level of stress on the kid, both as the pitcher and the hitter, depending on if it's a 2-0 count or an 0-2 count. Right. Again, they're human beings. So the stress of that, it makes a difference.
Okay. So I'm going to ask a really weird question. I'm throwing out a curveball. What about golf? That there's certain similarities there, right? Could you utilize the data that you have with the analytics that you have and like transfer that with golf pretty simply? You might be able to, right?
So I haven't looked at these companies in a while, but probably 10, 15 years ago, there was this company I saw you could put little devices on your golf clubs so that it would automate and give you all this data. Right. So that stuff's been out there for a while. So there's probably several companies that are doing it. Guys get super anal about their golf swing and trying to fix it, practicing every day once they get into it.
Mm-hmm.
So for that marketplace, there's probably something there. But it's also a numbers game. There's not that many people who can afford to play golf as when they're kids.
Right. I've also heard golf is like really a mental game at a certain point. Like you can really mess yourself up with if you like hit a couple of bad ones, you just like get lost in the moment of like hitting a bad.
Oh, no, ball. Completely. Like, so this is one of the reasons I love sports, right? Because you watch mm-hmm. like in golf, Bryson DeChambeau is the king of analytics in golf.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But he's a robot. He can be like that. Right. Most human beings. Right. You've got the mental condition. Right. And so I used to always tell my friends playing golf because I had this one friend, Danny, who was always the most emotional golfer. Way better than me. But he'd make one bad shot and he'd be talking about it for six holes. And what I keep telling him is you got to play like Kobe, right? Because Kobe Bryant, what made him so good was when it came to athletics, it was a short memory, right? If he missed 30 shots in a row, didn't matter. He had the confidence he was going to make that next shot. He didn't let those prior failures come into his consciousness and prevent him from making the next shot that he can do. And right. It's a numbers game. Right. So.
Right.
Right. So the best baseball hitters are the ones that right. You know, the math analytics of the pitcher you're facing. Right. You know what they like to throw. You know your counts, etc. But you don't know what happened last at bat. Right. Guess who has the highest strikeout rate on the Dodgers or of all the starters?
I have no idea.
Ohtani.
Ohtani. And he's one of their best players right now. Right.
He might be the best player in baseball, but he strikes out a lot. So again, he fails a lot, but he succeeds a lot, and it's a numbers game, and that's the analytics part of it. That's the NBA changed because of analytics, and now it's a three-point game because once they did the math and they figured out that, right, even though you're going to miss more shots taking threes, your expected value is going to be higher than doing a bunch of twos, even making more.
So that's an interesting point because you just touched on something. You're like, you take the emotionality out of something and you show these are the numbers and this is what the numbers look like. And that has no emotion. It's just like, numbers don't lie. Here's what that looks like. So do you think that I'm going to bring it back to, you know, the junior leagues where your little ones are playing right now. Well, Austin's going to be 7 next year, so he's going to level up. So with all the dads on the team, do you think that you guys are going to be able to shape your kids into just like not letting sports get the best of them emotionally? And just like, I'm not saying being a robot, that's not what I'm saying, but like really logically thinking through, okay, well, here's this moment. I'm going to be successful in some of these moments. I'm going to be unsuccessful in others, but I'm just going to keep going forward. Do you think that that's going to be something that your fathers and, you know, sons obviously are going to be able to utilize to get and become stronger teams as you evolve and your kids get older together?
No question, right? Because at the end of the day, make no mistake, right? I believe this, God willing, Austin can make it, but no expectation because probably won't happen. But I love what kids learn through sports, the camaraderie, going through the tough losses, seeing them cry, seeing them win and it really meaning something. They learn so much from that,
mm-hmm.
right? So like I don't try to let the kids get lost in the numbers, right? It's more for the coaches, right?
Okay.
They get to deal with that, right? But I don't go over the numbers and stuff with the kids. It's more of pull hitter, big hitter, right? Getting them positioned so that they're on the spot to make the best play, mm-hmm. right? Because and end of the day, the kids, they have a lot of fun when they win.
They do.
Again,
I remember liking winning too.
But it's great for them to lose too, right? It like last weekend, it's because Lindsay, my wife, grew up without sports, and now she is obsessed. And she told me this past Sunday we had a come from behind win, and it was the first time we had one like that. She's telling me she'll never forget that game for the rest of her life. And I'm like, this game didn't mean anything. It wasn't even a tournament, but again, it was fun. The kids love it, and that's what it's really about. The numbers help them understand that and get better. Right, with Austin, I'll use it to show him right where he's hitting the ball and how to try to get better. But I don't want him to get lost in it, because at the end of the day, baseball's not numbers, right? It's 70, 80% playing, having fun, and athleticism, right? 20 to 30, the numbers just help you get a little bit of edge. Really, it's who can hit it farther, right?
So as this evolves, like, we know you're using it with the junior leagues and you're the dad crew, right? But now that you're going to be working with high schools, like, if you could have it your way, like, if this was Burger King, I'm asking my Burger King question. Like, if this was Burger King and you could have it your way, what does this look like for you in the future? Like, does this look like a side hustle for you? Do you want other people to embrace this? Do you want to get, you know, majorly paid for it? Like, what do you want to do with this? I know you really like it. That's why I'm asking, like, so you have an analytical mind. Right?
So if the test run works, right, and I find it really is helpful for these teams and we can really justify the value proposition, then I'm going to bring in a good friend of mine to lead this. I don't have enough time in my life to do this full time. I got too many other things going on. But
whatever do you mean?
But I do have at least one person, possibly two, and who I've been in talks with to kind of take the reins, and they have the contacts everywhere and can make it work. So if it works, we'll do that. Right, for this year, I'm not trying to get customers. I'm just trying to do it with a few teams and learn, and because I found myself learning in the process. Right. Mm-hmm. One of the things I had to do, because I realized these coaches either never learned or don't remember statistics, I need to teach them stats. So that led me. So I wrote a book on baseball statistics. So now we'll be sending those out, and then we turn that into we're going to do a whole series that a good friend of mine named Stacy's going to be helping with.
I am, definitely. No, I mean, like, that's the whole point of this conversation, or like what, like when we call it intrinsic data at GenUX, it's like people use math and they don't even know that they're using math. They just don't. I mean, you do, and some of the other people that we interview do, but there's a lot of people who just like intrinsically adjust what they're doing to match the marketplace that they're living in or the world that they're in. They don't even know that they're using probability. They don't know that they're using data points. They don't even realize that they've created a hypothesis and have changed. And so what I'm doing here is like, the whole point of this is to bring awareness to people that they are actually a lot smarter than they think that they are, regardless of where you actually live. And you do, as you grow up and you're adulting, like whatever that means, and you're evolving through life and you're making these key decisions. Like, it's not like you're super young and making decisions in a vacuum. You're making decisions based on inputs and data. And like, that's driving you to do a certain thing. Just like with you and stats and like explaining that to the dads again, I bet they remember once you talk to them about it, but it's like, it's locked in their brain somewhere where they haven't touched it in years and years and years. It's kind of like, you know, remembering how to divide fractions. Like, if I saw an explanation of how to do it, I would be like, oh yeah, I remember how to divide fractions now on a piece of paper. But like, that's what I have a calculator for. And I remember when I was a kid, I don't know if you remember this, but do you remember your teachers telling you, it's not like you're going to have a calculator in your pocket that you can do, you have to know how to do this stuff. And you're like, guess what? I got a calculator in my pocket, people. There you go. So, I mean, it's just like, we evolve over time. But anyways, the point is, that's data is.
Here's the fascinating thing, right? Because I'm, I think the key thing you nailed on there is one of the things that makes people good and smart is our ability to operate without all the information, right? Mm-hmm. Because if you were standing on a railroad track and trying to calculate all the probabilities of, right, a train coming, et cetera, survival, you'll get hit by a train while you're doing the math.
Right.
Right. So humans are really good and we've evolved, right, being able to use heuristics and, right, make quick decisions with imperfect information because, right, you're never going to have it all. Right. And that's why I'm loving this baseball project, because it's the right stats are helpful, but it's real world. Right. You're not going to get all the information. And if you get it, it doesn't matter because it next hits different.
Yeah.
Right.
Which will adjust the math. I wanted to say an algorithm, but you're probably not using an algorithm. You'd just be adjusting the analysis based. Well, actually, the analysis would self-adjust because you'd be getting another data point. And once you enter that extra data point, the data point will shift the percentages of where they go. Like, say someone is hitting like the kid on your team that was doing really, really well and hitting into left field. Well, next season, if he hits 6 to 7 more balls into right field, that could adjust his whole like percentage of, you know, how it's going to adjust his percentages of where he's hitting the ball, basically. But it would take
the end of the day,
a needle, right?
At the end of the day,
yeah.
Right. They're kids, right? Yeah. Or they're adults. And like we, in one of our games, we realized the other team was doing this against us and against one of our kids. Put it was a left-handed hitter who never hits it on the left side. So they put their shortstop right on second base. Kid hits a pop-up right to him and he drops it because it's sports. It's baseball. Like,
yeah, there's variables.
You got to make the play. That's why sports are great. It's not math. Math helps.
No, but it's not.
You got to win the game.
There's a lot of like multiple inputs to human behavior too, right? Like just because X is supposed to happen doesn't mean Y is going to be the result. So it's dynamic, right? And like there's tons of different things that affect and, you know, impact what someone is doing and how they're doing it regardless of the task, right? So that's kind of the way it is. But you can still take data and the data is going to tell you a story, because I always say this and I'm sure you do too. Numbers don't lie. Like
people.
They just don't lie and they become averages.
People do. So like, people do what AI does, but data doesn't lie.
I know. AI lies. It can't do predictive modeling very well. It tries to, and then it gets really sad and it tells you that you're wrong when it's wrong, but we won't get into that right now. But no, I just think like the variables and the things that you can't control are the interesting things about life. Just as what you're talking about with like the kids. Like the kids, I call them agents of chaos for a reason. Like you never know what you're going to get one day to the next at certain ages, right? And then they become teenagers. And I mean, none of my friends have experienced teenagers yet. They're coming.
They're scared.
It's just funny. Like you, who knows, like you're going to get used to something and then something else is going to happen, right? And the same thing happens when you're taking data on sports and then something else happens. Like you just never know where people are going to end up. So questions. Where can people find all this information? Do you guys have a website or are you just like word of mouth right now?
This is just word of mouth. So people can find me at atalafinancial.com. If they want to find any of the books, it's at www.tinyurl.com/SeanSPat. So that'll link you to the Amazon page where I think it's up 25 books now, because I have all the textbooks for my classes are up there. Baseball books up there, and then I'll have all the other stats books. And so if you name a topic, I'm trying to find new topics for books because I'm running out at this point.
So just for everybody who is listening or watching as you downloaded, or if you're looking on YouTube, those hashtags will be below. So I just want to say, Sean, thank you. I love talking about statistics. People think it's a lot harder than it actually is. Like statistics are very logical. And it's just one of my favorite things to talk about in general. And I love how you're using it with young kids, because I'm just so interested to see what happens. And I know that maybe we'll talk about this in 10 years. And maybe there's going to be some other version of whatever a podcast is and like whatever that looks like.
We'll see.
Who knows? And it's just going to be interesting to see his evolution and how, I mean, because you're going to have all these stats on your son if he continues to play baseball for the next 10 years. So I'm loving to see what happens there.
A lot of fun.
Yeah. So thanks for joining us. And we will see you next time at GenUX.
Thank you.